So James last week dealt with, he was dealing with folks that were wealthy. Now, he wasn't getting on them for being wealthy. It's important we understand that. He wasn't mad at them for being wealthy or giving them a hard time. What he was upset about was he was mad that these wealthy folks were using their, well, first they were earning money, some of them in a sinful way. But more importantly, once they had this money, they weren't using it in godly ways. They were hoarding it from people that they could have been a help. And if you remember, if you ever studied the beginning of the church in Acts, one of the key elements of the church was that they took all their money. Now, we don't exactly do this here. But they took all their money. They put it together in a pile and they said, church, you decide how to decipher it out. Now, we do a similar element of that where we give our tithes and our offerings to the church. And then we say, church, go and use it for God's glory as you see fit. And so in this time, how you handled your money was really significant. And so really, James is coming after these guys saying, man, you have been doing this the wrong way. You've been selfish with your money. You've been either hoarding it or using it sinfully. And we need to correct that. So that's ultimately what we talked about last week. Now we're going to see James transition to those that are being affected by the people that aren't using their money wisely and by people that are overseers, or we could put it in terms of they were the boss. They were in charge of their company or their organization. So for us, let's pause for just a minute because I always think this is important. Money is a great thing. Money is a gift that God gives to us. It is, more importantly though, it's a tool. It's a tool to be used by God, by God's people for God's glory. And so I want to always be clear. Having money is a great thing. Not having money isn't always a punishment, though it may be because you made a bad decision and that's on you, different story. But just because you may not be rich, okay, doesn't mean God's decided you deserve less blessing. All right, that's not how it works. And I also think what's important whenever you talk about wealth, and again, that's not really the focus tonight, but just to connect these two sides. When you talk about wealth, you also got to remember that wealth isn't always money. Sometimes it's just resources. Sometimes it's time and how you serve. I think about for Sarah and I say this in a humble way. I hope not to come across as if bragging. We don't make a lot of money. I'll be honest about that. You don't even have to wonder. You can go look for yourself. We don't make a lot of money. But one thing that the Lord has always blessed us with is whatever home we've been in, we've always been able to buy a home that had an extra bedroom. And we have utilized that space in two different homes. The last time we checked, we were well over 20 people that had lived with us for longer than a week. Okay, not just one night little stays. And most of them were months at a time. Couples that had just gotten married and were just getting started. Single moms that had just had a baby and were just desperate. Other people that just needed a place. So Sarah and I, we've always said, hey, we don't make a lot of money. We can't always pay everyone's bills, but one thing we can do is we can use the space, the resources God's given us to help others. Now, we don't do that to brag, and if I'm honest, sometimes it's not always with a joyful heart at the beginning. If I could be honest with you, we'd sit down and Sarah would say, hey, we got someone that needs a place to stay. What do you think? And I'm like, nope, I got space. That's my space. I like to watch TV up there. Like, that's inconvenient. Rather not. But in the end, we do it, and it was always a blessing. Another thing, just for fun, just because we're going with our house, is our garage recently. Y'all know COVID hit. We shut down our gym. We talk about working out sometimes in here. And so we started working out in our garage, and I remember, I'll never forget the day, a buddy of mine called, and he said, hey, man, I'm really out of shape, and I'm scared of COVID. Great way to start a conversation. I see you're working out in your garage. Could I come join you? And again, I'm going to be honest because I'm a transparent guy. No, I didn't want to do it. I got my garage stuff to be alone, isolated, to work out by myself. But he called and said, hey, I really want to come. And so I thought, okay, fine, you know, come try it once. He ain't going to make it, right? I work out hard. He'll be out in a day. Well, sure enough, he shows up, and guess who comes outside as well? Sarah. In her workout clothes, ready to go. We never talked about this, by the way. She just showed up. And from that day on, started a new journey where we ended up getting to a place where we had 19 people coming to our garage to work out with us almost every day of the week. And guess how much we charged them? Not a penny, right? I lost money because I kept buying more equipment because more people were coming, right? So it just goes to show you, like, as an encouragement, right? There are ways we can be so wise with what God's given us, and it doesn't always have to cost money. Sometimes it's just being gracious with our resources and with our time and with our effort. And so I just think it's always delicate when you talk about wealth, and some people do really well. And I want you to feel like that's a bad thing. It's a great thing. The question is, what do we do with the money, the wealth, the resources that God blesses us with? But sometimes we're on the other end. And sometimes we work at a company where, man, the environment is just tough. Maybe the boss is just mean, rude. They don't take care of you. They take advantage of you. You could fill in the blank. And this is an angle that James is going to come at now with the text to say, okay, I've been talking to you that I was trying to correct. Now I want to talk to you, to those of you that may be under the scrutiny of someone that's not using their wealth, their money, or their business wisely. And so this is how James is going to start this transition of the text. Today we'll be in chapter 5. We'll look verses 7 through roughly 12 if we can get that way. And then next week Aaron will come and close this bad boy down. All right, let's begin. Chapter 5, verse number 7. I'm going to read a couple verses and then we'll just break it down. Here we go. James says this, "Be patient, therefore, brothers, until the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, being patient about it until it receives the early and the late rains. You also be patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand." So let's pause. Let's break this down. A couple of great things we can find right off the bat. So remembering the context, he's encouraging those of us that are in a bad work environment or in a bad relationship where money's being used incorrectly, we're being maybe taken advantage of, we're just in an unhealthy environment, whatever it may be. And he says, now I want to encourage you. So basically, first, before we can get into the nitty-gritty of these two verses, the first thing we need to understand is that he's giving us this overview and saying, hey, be careful that your present pain or your present circumstances that are inconvenient or difficult don't take your eyes off the main picture, which is keeping our eyes locked on Jesus and the return of Christ to bring heaven down to earth. That's the big picture here he's saying in these first two verses. Don't let this distract you. Now, we can lean into these two verses and pull out a couple things that can be really helpful. First thing he says is, be patient, right? And we love that word, right? Oh, be patient. That's so great, right? Oh, right. So easy to do. No problem, right? We all know that it can be difficult. And he's saying, hey, listen, be patient here. Trust God that he will handle these things. He will handle that boss that's giving you a hard time. He will handle that business partner that may be taking advantage of you, whatever the story. I don't want to get too bogged down in all the potential ways it could turn. But God will handle that. Listen, we serve a just God that does not handle injustice. He will take care of it. But here's what we have to remember. Sometimes it'll be in the now. Sometimes it'll be in the later. But always it'll be done because God is just and there is no other way for him. By the way, just a side note, justice could be served through a person coming to Christ. Remember that. That was free. You might want to write that down. Okay. The reality, though, is this. God's going to take care of it. So we must be patient and trust him to take care of it, right? And that's not always easy to do, especially when it's our work, because we spend a lot of time at work, a lot of time involved in business, things like that. It could be really, really difficult, but we must trust that God will take care of that. So he says, first, I want you to be patient. And then he gives us an example, right? Just to encourage us, because patient is hard to understand. He uses this great example of a harvester. And he says, see how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, being patient about it until it receives the early and the late rains. So basically he says, hey, think about this. Now, in our context, we don't think about harvesting that much, so it's a little different deal, our fruit and produce. But in this context, in this climate, the culture in which this was written, this would have been a very easy illustration for them to understand. He says, hey, when you go plant your fruit or your seeds, you don't get angry if there's not fruit the next day. You know that it's going to take time. You have to be patient. And yet we get into a situation where it's not going our way and we go, all right, Lord, today's the day. Fix it. Fix it now. Come on. You're not going to allow your son or your daughter to go through this, right? No way. You're going to let me go through this another day. And then a couple weeks later, you're going, what? A couple years later, what in the world are you doing, Lord? He's saying, be patient. Remember, man, just because we don't see God working doesn't mean God's not working. Just because you don't see that seed growing into the fruit under the ground doesn't mean it's not happening. So saying, be patient here. By the way, interesting note on the rains, and I'm going to spin it a little bit, I think can be helpful for us. There were two times that it would rain. It would rain all the time, but there were two key times of rain, the early rainy reference and the late rain. The early rain, typically the goal of the early rain was that it would soften the soil so that all the seeds and all the things that needed to go into the ground would have a chance to get in there and get settled. That second wave of rain, the late rains they referred to, different months these would happen, this was the rain that was going to help that produce get nourished so that it would actually have a chance to grow. So the rain was always a good thing. Now, let me spin it for just a second. I'm going to pull it out of context. Just throw it in your life for a minute. Sometimes, it would have been awesome if it was pouring right now, but it didn't work. I was hoping it would. But imagine on a rainy day, I know, God and I should have talked. We didn't. I'm just kidding. We totally did, but he had a different plan, okay? But the reality is this. So a lot of times when we experience a day that it rains, what do we feel, right? Most of the time, there's a few of us that like rainy days, you get happy. But most of us, it's kind of gloomy, right? It's dark outside, it's gray. It's not always a happy thing. And the reality is this. Sometimes we can use bad circumstances in our life and we can just feel like it's like a rainy day. It's just kind of gloomy. We can't quite see far because of the clouds and all the things. And then it's raining and it's getting in the way of the things we planned, right? I like to do things outside. And whenever it rains, I play a lot of tennis too. Whenever it rains, it just gets in the way, right? It's a bad day when it rains. But in our life, if we take this into the context of how we navigate the life we live, let's just say those rains for you, those tough times that come, you start looking and you go, man, it's gloomy because things are tough. It's gloomy because things are hard right now. I don't see exactly what's happening. I want to remind you that just like the rain played a key part in the harvesting, it plays a key part in your life too. Because rain, just like it softens the ground, tough times soften our heart. Tough times start to break up the soil a little bit to help us to see things differently as God's moving in our life if we'll allow it. The second rain was the one that produced the fruit, right? It really was the one that helped the growth take a step forward. Guess what? When it rains in your life, the tough times, the hard struggles, those are places where God uses you to grow oftentimes the most. We tend to grow the most when we're going through the difficulties and the trials. And so as a way of kind of flipping it in an easy, practical way for us to think about, when you feel like it's raining in your life, be encouraged. It means that God's doing some work. Don't run from it. It may not be enjoyable all the time. But trust that God's doing the work. And then add in there, be patient. Now, another thing that happens sometimes when we're thinking about difficulties and trials is we can take our mind off of the end result that God's working. Okay, so this is a kind of an interesting thing I found that I'll just share with you. There's this idea of the 50-20 principle. And it comes from Genesis 50-20. Now, Genesis 50-20 picks us up right in the middle of Joseph's story. You remember Joseph sold off into slavery by his brothers. You fast forward to the end. Joseph stands in front of them basically as royalty. And they're buying food from him. And ultimately, there's this conversation that takes place between he and his brothers. And he says to his brothers, what you meant for evil, God used for good. What you meant for evil, God used for good. And so the 50-20 principle is this idea that, hey, when I'm going through rough times, tough times, things I can't see the other side, I'm going to trust the 50-20 principle, which is that even when I have a boss that's taking advantage of me or a counterpart, a business partner, that's not doing everything they're supposed to, I'm going to trust that God's going to take care of it. He'll take even the evil and somehow use it for good. God may take that boss that's been really tough on you to shake you up just enough to open your eyes maybe to see another opportunity. God may take that boss that's giving you a hard time to all of a sudden open up a door for you to be able to come up close to them, to encourage them, challenge them, maybe even lead them to the Lord in hopes to not only change their life, but change the life of everyone in your company. So we begin to see that, man, God uses us when we lean into this rather than out. So the 50-20 principle says, hey, no matter what's going on, I'm going to trust that even if man is being evil, I'm going to trust that God can take that evil, turn it upside down, and use it for good. Romans 8:28 says something similar, right? God takes all things, works them together for good for those that love him and walk with him. The reality is this. Tough times in life, whether it's business, money related, or any other thing, it is a normal entity in the life of a Christian. Just expect it. But it's what we do with it. It's how we view it that makes all of the difference. So we can't forget about what's waiting on the other side. Then the last piece of this, he says, establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. And here's the word I want you to hear. When it comes to money, okay, remember this whole thing is about money, but just right here. When it comes to money, what happens sometimes when we have a little success, whether we become wealthy or we just have enough to be comfortable and happy, it's very easy for us to lose sight of where our end destination is. Simply put, when we become content with the world we live in, we stop thinking about the world we're headed to. And God's desire for all of us is that while we're here, not that you can't be comfortable, you can enjoy life, that's not the goal, but the goal is that you and I would be soldiers for Him, bringing the gospel, encouraging, challenging, teaching, training, knowing that in the end, we are headed to a destination that God says, that's where all the pain is gone. That's where all the sickness is gone. That's where money is irrelevant, because all of us are rich in Christ in that heavenly place. That's where, even if you're under a boss your entire life that's absolutely miserable, even if justice doesn't come till the end, you and I as believers in Jesus Christ can be assured in the end we will have justice, we will find peace, we will find fulfillment. But while we are here, we are on mission. We are passing through this world on to the next. And when you and I become content with the world we're in, we'll stop thinking about the world we're headed to. And that is the end goal. Very, very important we keep that in mind. Okay, let's move forward. So now he's going to move from patience. Now he's going to talk about grumbling. What a great message, right? We're just going after one negative thing after the other. Look at verse 9. Do not grumble against one another, brothers, so that you may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing at the door. As an example of suffering and patience, brothers, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. Okay, so let's pause there. We'll read on and get into Job. Let's look at this for just a second. So first thing he says, do not grumble against one another. Okay, and this is the deal. It's very easy for us when we start hitting some trials or some frustrations, whether it's at work, it could extend to home, could extend to the church world. We start to grumble. We start to complain. We start to get disappointed or frustrated with everything around us or all the things that are happening to us. And what's the first thing we tend to do when we get into that place? Not only do we gripe and complain, but we tend to do it to the people we love most. And oftentimes we end up bringing them in, whether we misuse and abuse them because we're frustrated, or we bring them into our negativity and all of our problems. And the reality is this, what James is saying is, listen, you're going to go through some trials. Here we're talking about work and bosses, but just make it across the board. You're going to go through trials. Don't get in a group of grumblers and complainers and make that problem even more than it is. He says we should be encouraging each other, loving one another, challenging one another, not building a group of people that get together and grumble and complain about all the things that are wrong in life. And here's the deal. As soon as we start to do that, we get in trouble. Let me give you an example that's just for fun. The other day, I was spending time with my kids. I have a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old, having a good time. We were wrestling or something. I don't know what happened. Someone got hurt. They always get hurt. They're growing up, becoming tough. But anyways, so we're playing. We're having a great time. I'm totally engaged, having fun, throwing them around, throwing pillows, all the good stuff. And then I got a text message that I needed to respond to. All right, now don't judge me yet, okay? We all get text messages, and sometimes you pause your playtime. So my kids got distracted. They're playing over there. So I grabbed my phone. Let's show you what it looked like. Grab my phone over here, away from them. I didn't ignore them or deny them. They were distracted with themselves. And I grab my phone. I see the message, and I go, okay, I need to respond to this. So, boom, I start to respond. Well, then the response came back, and now I'm kind of locked in, right? You ever done this? You didn't realize it, but you just got locked in. And then all of a sudden, my son comes, and he goes, Dad, come on, come play with us. And I'm like, stop. Right now, I got to finish this really, really quick, right? And he does it again. And I'm like, would you stop? It was exaggerated. It was longer than that. But I finally was like, would you just leave me alone? And I'm like, what is this? I was totally engaged, having fun. Nothing could have distracted me, but I took one moment to take my eyes off, and I'm frustrated, right? Now, put yourself in this situation with the grumblers. You get into these groups or these people and you start grumbling and complaining, and everything else frustrates you because you took your eyes off what mattered. And this is the picture here James is saying. Don't be surprised you're going to have struggles and times when you need to be patient. Don't be mad at everybody else around you because it isn't going your way. And don't bring other people into your mess. He's saying, trust the Lord, keep your eyes on what matters, and remember all this trouble and all this frustration, it's temporary. It will fade away. It's super practical and yet very difficult for us to do. Now, interesting, after he talks about this grumbling, he says, so that you may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing at the door. Now, who's the judge? The judge is talking about Jesus. He's talking about this this end of time moment where we stand before God and God judges us. And you go, wait a minute, if we're believers, because he's talking to the believers, clearly, without a doubt, he's talking to believers. What's happening? This is kind of confusing. I thought the believers didn't need to be judged because they were right with Jesus, and you would be correct. The reality is this, Jesus is going to judge those that are not in Christ. He will assess your Christian life for those of us that are in Christ. We forget that sometimes. I'm good. Saved, covered by the blood, do my thing, right? James challenged us already a couple weeks ago, but let's just say we weren't studying James. Very easy to get locked up in this idea. I'm saved, covered by the blood, faith alone, that's all I need. I'm good, I'm going to heaven, all is well. Listen, don't ever miss this. There will be an assessment that takes place at the end of your life. Man, you'll be responsible for how you handled your family, how you treated your wife, how you treated your kids. You'll be responsible for your leadership. All of us will be responsible for our behavior. It won't be a heaven and hell distinction, but it will be an assessment. There's a reality there we don't talk about. Now, here, be clearly, we are saved by faith and faith alone. But as we've been talking about for many weeks, true saving faith leads us to works that honor God. It's a natural byproduct, not a mandate to be saved. And in the end, this is what he's referring to. The judge will stand there. We'll hear it again in a few verses. Jesus is going to be there to assess you. Don't take your eyes off the mark, I think ultimately is what James is saying. And then he says, remember the prophets. Remember the prophets, guys like Jeremiah, Daniel, the list goes on and on. Job, we'll look at in just a second as a real life example. He says, all these guys, man, they went through some struggles. It was a challenge. Historians tell us that it was likely that prophets would be sick for days, thinking about sharing the words that God had laid on their heart, the judgment that God had told them to share. Can you imagine just standing, I'm going to paraphrase it, but just standing up in front of a bunch of people that think they're religious is going, yep, you're all condemned. Good luck. I mean, can you imagine, right? We get to come and just encourage you a little bit, and if it doesn't go well, we just say the Bible said it. I'm just the messenger, right? These guys, I mean, different world, right? They would be sick for days thinking about what they're going to have to share with the groups of people in front of them. And so, he says, remember these guys, man, they were faithful when everyone else was against them. Everyone was mad at them. But one in particular he uses in verse 11. We know this guy, Job. Not Job, though it would have related to the beginning of the message, but Job. Verse 11, behold, we consider those blessed who remain steadfast. You have heard of the steadfastness of Job, and you have seen the purpose of the Lord, how the Lord is compassionate and merciful. Now pause right there. If you remember the story of Job, some of you go, compassionate and merciful. My goodness. Job went, what is it, like 52 chapters of pain and misery. Where's the compassion and the mercifulness? If that's the example, sorry, I'm out. I'm not interested. And I'll be honest, that would be an understandable thought. I mean, Job went through a lot, and that's not the story for everyone. But the point is, Job modeled for us a multitude of things. But there's three particular things we can pick up from Job that I think James is really hitting at. Number one, Job stayed faithful even through the pain. And as family turned on him, as friends turned on him, as his children were taken away, as his wealth was taken away, the list goes on and on and on. Yet Job stayed steady, stayed steady, stayed steady. In addition, the second thing is, it doesn't even refer to Job specifically, but Job was an example to all of us. He was an example. And you say, where's the mercy and the compassion? Well, listen, God is teaching us through Job. We still study it today. We'll pull it out in class sometimes. We'll do series on Job, and we'll learn how God was working through Job. We get the glimpse behind the scenes, how it operated. One of the key things we learned in the very beginning is that everything that Satan did, he was allowed to do by the permission of God, right? He had to ask permission before he could do this. Like, we're learning about the character and the nature of God, and yet we're watching a painful experience unfold. Difficult and yet beautiful. Who is the example for? Man, the angels, for the believers, for us today to be able to learn from Job and what he went through. But then in the end, it shows us the compassion and the mercy. And that came in the very end when God said, finally, he restored everything that Job had lost and then some. And here's what we need to hear, because you always want to be careful when we talk about that, the idea of blessing and God giving us things. Listen carefully. God is going to give us everything and then you could ever imagine. And some of us will be blessed to experience a taste of that while on this earth. But all of us in Christ will experience the full weight of blessing when we get to heaven. And that's what we ride on, no matter how dark the world is. There are some people that they will experience pain and misery for most, if not all, of their life, all the way up to heaven. Regardless of what camp you're in the end, the hope for believers is not in this world, it's in the next. And yet, if we're blessed to receive from God some form of blessing or gift or a joy that we might find in life, it's all the gracious, merciful, and compassionate God extending us. But hear it clearly. It doesn't promise it. So an example would be someone you know, or maybe even you, that's sick with cancer. There are things that happen in this world we don't fully understand. But here's the deal. God doesn't promise you'll be pain-free on the earth. But he promised you, as believers in Christ, when we get to heaven, he's going to fix all of it. And so for some, we may walk the journey of cancer, just as one of the many examples, all the way to the grave. But we can still have hope in God because we know what's waiting for us on the other side. Job taught us a multitude of things, and so did the prophets. James says, hey, take a minute, pause, remember that. Remember what those guys went through, and remember how they stayed faithful. You too will go through your ups and your downs, but remain faithful. And then James wraps this up, kind of takes a bit of a right turn, though I'm sure there is some easy connection here. But he says this last verse in verse 12. But above all, my brothers, do not swear, either by heaven or by earth or by any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no be no, so that you may not fall under condemnation. Now, I want to tell you, when we use the word swear here, he's not talking about cussing, but I would encourage you to avoid inappropriate language. Okay, can I just say it? I don't want you to go, oh, he said it's not cussing. I'm free to reign. Let's go. Where are you at, brother? Cut me off on the road again. Let me tell you. No. Definitely not permission here to swear, but to understand that the swearing he's referring to has nothing to do with our language per se. But it's our promises, it's our oath, it's our, I'm going to do that, I promise, oh, on my mother's grave, I will. But he's saying, don't do this stuff. And here's why. See, the reality is, it wasn't a sin to make a promise or even to swear to do something. But what had happened in this context is very important. See, what they would do is they would make promises and God's name would be connected to that promise. And when God's name was connected to a promise that two people would make to each other, that promise was binding because God's name was connected to it. But when you made a promise that didn't have God's name, officially, unofficially, it wasn't binding. In our context, you could think of it this way. I may say, hey, Aaron, I'm going to cover your teaching for the next year. But I got my little fingers crossed behind my back. You remember that when you were kids? You're like, I'll do it. Yeah, like, I gotcha. Right? I don't even know where that came from. I don't know how it works. But this is the picture here. He's saying, you're saying you're going to do something knowing you're not going to do it. And this is what he's calling out. And so the idea would be making a promise you don't intend to keep. Flippantly saying, oh, of course, yeah, man, I got you. Anytime you need something, I got you. Well, guess what? If I call you and ask for $1 million and you don't give me $1 million, you just broke your promise. Be careful. Some of you are like, oh, I should dial back what I say these days, right? The point is, we don't want to be flippant. We don't want to intentionally say we're going to do something and not do it. Rather, he says, get rid of the promises and the swears and all these things and just let your what? Your yes be yes and your no be no. Now, we could probably go into a political tirade right now. We're not going to do that. But I can say to you and I, this is actually really important because you and I represent the Lord everywhere we go. Especially, and remember where this message started. It really started in the business world. So let's kind of wrap it there in this thought. In your business world, are you one of those guys or girls that maybe make a flippant promise as part of the business deal, knowing you're probably not going to be able to keep that? Do you swing things to make them sound better or look different, knowing that it's all a lie? Or do you just flippantly say things and like, oh, well, we'll do that and we'll do that and we'll do that, knowing that you're going to change your mind? What James is saying to the believers is this should not be a part of our life. What I'd extend to you is in any form of business or maneuvering or life or family or even with our kids, grandkids, fill in the blank. When we say yes, it should mean yes. When we say no, it should mean no. And when we don't know, we should say that so we don't put ourselves in a situation where people can't trust us. Because here's the thing. Think of it like this. If you build a relationship with someone that's built on a bunch of lies and they don't trust you, and then you decide, hey, I'm going to sit down and try to share Christ with them, guess what? They're not going to trust you. They're not going to trust you. Some people have asked, why is the Bible full of a bunch of rules? Like, it's all these things we can't do, right? Now, the simple thing is, if we step back and look at it, everything God asks us to do or not to do is ultimately to protect us, right? It's to lead us. It's to nurture us. The world may tell us it's to hinder us, but we know it's to protect us. But watch this. When you and I live lives, and really the whole book of James, right? It's basically been life adjustment after life adjustment. Good things. When we live our lives in according to the things of God, we look different to the world. The world looks at us and goes, I don't know if I understand it, but I see something different in you. You remember I told you guys the story of my neighbors who were coming to work out with us, and just being around us challenged the way they speak and the way that they were thinking about. We never said anything. We never really did anything. It was just the presence of just being different. These things matter. And when you and I really get serious about saying, I want to be an ambassador for the gospel, I want to be someone that shares Christ with other people, or at least brings them to church in hopes that they might hear the gospel, and yet our lives make it difficult for us to even connect with someone. Guys, we have totally missed it. So we can't be ambassadors with the Great Commission if our lives make it complicated to even start the conversation. And so James here, and really in this entire book, and we have one last section to go, but this entire book has been, hey, let's look in a mirror and let's ask ourselves, man, how am I doing looking like Christ? And we recognize we're never going to be perfect, but I hope you recognize that every year we should look a little different. Every new year, I try to think about this sometimes. I'll be honest, I forget sometimes. But every new year should be a chance to step back and look and say, man, look at all the areas God grew me in. Look at all the areas he challenged me in. Man, if I can keep growing like this every year, how unbelievable is this going to be? Right? How phenomenal to be able to, can you imagine walking with God 30, 40, 50 years? Maybe some of you have even done that. And hopefully you're looking back and going, 50 years of growth. 50 years of growing closer to the Lord, challenging areas of my life. You would think, here's the deal, you would come to some of these lessons and go, man, that's child's play. I solved that 30 years ago. I'm trying to walk it all. What an amazing thought, right? That's a wonderful place to be. Now, don't let it become arrogance, right? That's a whole nother message we could go after. But the reality is, man, as we're going through life, we should look more and more and more like Christ, knowing we're never going to fully get there. But by golly, I want to get as close as I possibly can. Why? For my own benefit? No, because someone that looks like Christ shows the world what Christ looks like and opens the door for them to see him for who he truly is. When they walk out into the store and the Christian from the church they heard their friend goes to flip them off because they took their parking spot or the last banana, we wonder why people are confused when it comes to the gospel, right? But when you give up that parking spot when it made zero sense, I'm winging it here, or you gave them that last banana when you really needed it for your banana pudding or banana bread, I don't bake, I don't know. When you do those things, people go, thank you. You didn't have to do that. Huh. And they leave and they think, I wonder why he did that. That's kind of weird. Inconvenient for him. But hey, good for me. But you know what? They won't forget it. How many times have you had a story? Like, I'm sure all of us maybe had someone just ran it. I'll tell you one that was funny because I really did the wrong thing but ended up being the right thing. I remember... I was at Lifeway. Y'all remember Lifeway? We used to have bookstores back in the day. I was at Lifeway, and I was picking up a couple resources I wanted to read. And I walk outside, and it's actually the one close by. So the way the road is, it's kind of weird. You kind of go off the ramp, and you have to turn. There's a Sam's right there and Best Buy. And so it's a weird little angle. Anyways, this guy's truck had stalled right on the exit part. And it was really inconvenient for anyone and everyone, right? Now, I'd love to tell you that I just felt convicted by the Lord to jump out there, lift that guy's truck up with my bare hands, just kidding, but to move his truck out of the way. But honestly, I'm just going to be really honest with you. I was thinking, like, this is super inconvenient, and this kind of makes me mad. Because I know if I drive by this guy and I don't help him, I'm going to feel convicted all day long. I wasn't worried about doing the right thing. I was just mad that I'm going to feel convicted because I know where I am in my spiritual life. And so here's what I did. You ready for this? Here's what I did. I said, well, you know what? If I'm going to help this guy, so is somebody else. And I walked back into Lifeway, and I found the first guy who said, I said, hey, man, don't you see that guy's truck over there? We should go help him. That's literally what I said. I'm just being honest with you. And he goes, yeah, we should go help. So we walked over there. We helped this guy. And anyways, we got all done. And he finished, and he goes, man, thank you for challenging me to do. Man, that was awesome. And then he walked away, and I'll be honest, I didn't say anything. I didn't tell him my real thoughts on those. But I got back in my car, and I said, man, shame on me. I was still convicted. But it was so true, right? Because the reality is, man, that's life, right? You want to, like, at that time, I think I might have been on staff. I was definitely teaching the Bible. I don't know if I was on staff yet. But those are the moments where you're like, but look at the growth. Because let's just say I wasn't on staff yet. Probably 5 years before that, you know what the kind of trouble I'd be getting into? Like trying not to go to jail. And now the trouble I'm dealing is Lord, I helped a guy, but I didn't help him with the right heart, and I feel convicted. You see the growth, right? So I hope you see I'm dogging myself the whole time on this story. I don't want you to give me props or anything, because it was a terrible situation that the Lord and I had to really have a long conversation about. But my point is this is what growth looks like. And so you keep growing and you keep growing and you get to a place where I remember that day. I remember the day I helped that guy. I remember how crummy I felt. And the next time the Lord, I can't help every person, okay? So don't judge me. But the next time I feel that in my soul, I want to be faithful to respond because I know what can happen. I want God to be able to lead me that way. And I want that for you too, right? And so as we're growing, man, we're developing and we're becoming the men and women that God has called us to be, knowing we're never going to be perfect, but never settling for less. Because we desire to represent him well. So, all that leads to what you were wanting to know about earlier. And that is this. I've been at this church for 13 years on staff and about, really since I was a kid, but for about 2 years before that, for about 15 years, I was teaching the Bible just as a volunteer, doing my best to help the kingdom of God. And man, over these years, I've learned so much. I could write probably a seminary class or a whole curriculum on all the things God has taught me while I've been here, the areas I've grown in. Unbelievable. I did some math the other day. I think I've taught probably 45,000 hours of lessons and preaching and fill in the blank over these 13 years. And I look at all that, and it's just been incredible. But as we all know, man, things change sometimes. And so over the weekend, this has been a long process, but over the weekend, I accepted a position at a new church. The opportunity is I'll be the lead pastor of the Missouri City campus at River Point Church in Missouri City. And it's an opportunity that, and this isn't a knock on second in any way, it's just an opportunity I wasn't going to get here. This was just the way the chain works and where I was positioned. If I wanted to take a more responsibility role like that, I was going to have to step outside of the window of second, which was hard to do. But when the Lord opened the opportunity and I got to read through and meet the people and see what we're going to be accomplishing together and what it would look like, it was clear as day that God had positioned everything to lead right into this. Even so much as to wrapping up our James series. As a side note, but I was even like, oh, that's so cool. Like, how did that, you got to do one more next week. But I mean, we're there, right? How cool. But it's just been little thing like that after that. And so, I will finish out through this Sunday. I'll be here a couple of days during the week, but I won't be here the following Sunday. So for most people, really Sunday is kind of it. But I wanted to say that to you guys, one, because we've been walking this journey of James together and it's been a lot of fun and I hope you've enjoyed it. But two, I think it's important you hear a couple things, and this is going to be redundant, but I just want you to hear it. Number one, without this place, I would not have been able to take that new opportunity. I mean, what I've learned here, how I've grown, the things I've experienced, the good and the bad. Unbelievable training that has made me become the pastor that I am today. One that still has tons of growth. But I think about that. I don't take that for granted. I also think about the people. Man, so many of you guys, you've been walking with me just recently, some for many, many years, encouraging me, challenging me. Hey, you said that. That was wrong. Don't do that again. It's been amazing. Another time, I never thought about that for a fantastic. Hey, how you handled those people? I mean, you guys have been walking with me, and I know maybe not every one of you so personal, but it's just been such an amazing thing. And so for Sarah and I, one of the big challenges was, man, how do we leave our family, right? 13 years, how do we leave our family to go start something new with a new group of people? And that was hard. But the Lord's been gracious, and really since we've started sharing this with people, it's just been nothing but positive. There's some sorrow, of course, but it's been nothing but positive. And I just want to tell you, that's really blessed us because we were nervous to make that transition. I mean, this church family has walked with me through so many things, but if I'm being honest, the most particular recently was when Sarah's brother passed away. Man, it was a tough journey for our family, and this church came around us and supported us in a way that I've been doing for many other people for so long. And it was such a beautiful thing. And so I think for us, it was such a difficult thought to leave that. But the encouragement for me has just been that, man, this is what it looks like. Man, we're a family. The global church is the thing, not Second Baptist or River Point. It's the global church. The global church, meaning every Christian united under one banner, which is under the saving grace of Jesus Christ, following God Almighty. And so when you look at it like that, nothing really changes, just some locations. But we're all pursuing, so we're all still family, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And I hope it'll be that way. And then third, you know, I think about just how much I have desired to see people's lives change. And the way that I have done that, or at least tried my part in what God is doing, is to teach the Bible. And my when I told Sarah that I was ready to kind of take some steps forward in this, I said, I just hope that I've, and I'll put people and place and all that together, I hope that I've left it better than I found it. I was like, man, if I can say that, maybe not perfectly, but if I can say that, that for the most part, Chad left whatever he touched or whatever he did better than he found. And I feel like I can say, I did what I was supposed to do. I don't think there's ever a good time to go. I don't think there's ever a close. There's never an end. I mean, even if I waited till next week and Aaron closed it down and we're like, we're going to close the class. Guess what? There's still four more waiting for me the next week. There would never be a time to end. And I'm saying this to you because I'm gonna turn it on you now and say that I think that is a great way for us to measure some growth in our personal lives. That wherever we go as believers, whatever ministry we're a part of, whatever class we're in, whatever Lifeway bookstore we come out of, if we leave what we found better than we found it, we can say, Lord, I've been faithful with what you've handed me. When your kids come, were they better than when you found them? It's hard to say because they didn't do much when they came. But Lord, hopefully I took this child you entrusted me with and I poured in them everything that I had. My spouse, right? I'm talking to you. I hope my spouse is better than when I found her or him when we first met. All right, my class, my church, it goes on. So when you think about this, I just want to encourage you, man. I think James is trying to sharpen us, shape us, you know, mold us, and as the Lord is working in our life. And so I just encourage you as a litmus test, man, did I leave it better than I found it? I have harped in this church for years about how so many people like to come sit and listen, but they don't like to do the work. And I just want to leave you with this and pray that maybe the last thing I might say, at least to this group, that you'd hear this. And God did not make this place or any place to be a place to just sit, listen, that was good or not good, but maybe next week it'll be better, and to leave and do nothing with it. That is not the church God designed. That's the church America designed, and it's unacceptable. So you've been given gifts, and so have I. I came here because I told you all this story, but just in case, I sat in a chair, not in this room. Actually, it was right down the corner there. Y'all want to walk out for a fun memory. That corner there, 316. That was the first class that I stood in, taught in, was a part of. First Bible study class, January 7th, 2007. I'll never forget. And I'm telling you, because I chose, I wasn't on staff. I didn't want to be a pastor. Are you kidding me? We'd all laughed at you. That would have been crazy. But I just said, man, I just want to serve you, God. I'll do it, whatever you want. I was young and dumb, so that may have helped. But I'll do whatever you want, God. January 7th, 2007, I said, I want to play a part. I don't want to just sit and watch. I want to play a part. I want to give back. you know, our class grew, not because I was a good teacher. I was a horrible teacher. People told me that, literally. But I was good at making friends. And so I did that. I made friends. I built relationships. I loved on people. I encouraged them. And as I grew, they grew. And we all grew together. And so I'm just telling you, God gives us gifts to be used. And I feel like a broken record. If you sit under my teaching long enough, it just keeps, he always talks about having gifts and using them. There's a reason, because using my gift for this church and for the kingdom of God changed my life forever. And I believe the same can and is maybe even already happening with you. But don't ever miss that. The American church says, sit there, soak up and enjoy and leave. God's church says, this is your church. Find your gift or your gifts and serve the body of Christ to make it better and stronger. And who knows, maybe you'll be standing up here, not because you took a job, but talking about how, man, I remember when I got called out to serve in a place. And now look at my life and what impact I've been able to have because I said yes to God. We get right with him in salvation. That's step one. Wonderful. But then we walk with him. And if all you're doing is encountering him on Sunday mornings or maybe Wednesday nights, you are missing out on a whole world of things that God has designed you to experience. So, hey, when we hit tough times with our jobs, we'll go back to James for a second. Man, we're going to remember, all right, man, God's got us. We're going to be patient. We're going to keep our eye on the prize. This isn't our end, no matter how painful it may be. The end is heaven. And so while I'm here, I want to be faithful to God. So I'll be patient, keep my eye on the prize. I'm going to trust God. I'm not going to use swearing to wiggle my way out of problems or situations. I'm going to navigate even through the difficulty and trust God every step of the way. And if we scan back on a bigger picture, I think what James has been trying to tell us is, listen, if you've gotten right with God, you won't have to work. You'll want to work. You will want to watch your faith move into an area of works because of what Christ did for you on the cross. And that is one of the best places that we can be.